Well, it is wonderful to be with everybody this week. I hope everybody's having a great start to the fall. I can't believe it. We got kids going back to school. We got football games about to start. It's just crazy. The fall's here and summer's wrapping up for so many people. So we hope that everyone's having a great week. I am back in studio today for another Captain's Corner edition. But today's unique. I've got two captains in the seat. So I'm joined by David Stanley, our CEO, of course, for these Captain Corner conversations. But our co-captain today is George Colmia, one of our senior advisors now. An advisor of counsel?
Retired. Sort of, kind of.
Yeah, sort of, kind of. Still has an office. Still, we ask him to still show his face around here. So
we love his wisdom.
Gentlemen, I really appreciate the time. What we've kind of done in the past is kind of do a quick update on just what's going on in the world. And we could do one every week because there's so much going on. But any quick off the top tidbits or hits as far as from your seat, what you're seeing in, or advice you'd like to give just from a high level? You've got politics, economy, feds, et cetera, you name it.
I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and it's best exemplified by what happened with a client of ours, 15-year client who's been on the ledge two previous times. I was able to talk him off the ledge. This time, last week, last Friday, we talked for 30 minutes. He wanted out of the stock market entirely.
Wanted out.
And that has weighed on me ever since then. And so he said, if you don't hear from me on Monday morning, just get me out Monday. So we got him out Monday. We called him first to make sure. He said, yeah, I want out.
Okay.
And that just bugs the dickens out of me because I have no idea what it was he heard, what he paid attention to that he shouldn't have. But I'm talking to him today. I talked to him yesterday just to make sure I could set up a time today. I want to know what would make a guy change the way he thinks. What are our other investors hearing, seeing, reading that makes them get away from the primary message of investing?
Sure.
Something is happening, I think, that is destructive to how people invest. And I think there's probably several different reasons for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that is. I can't identify the reason, but there's got to be more than one.
It's pretty toxic. If we got clients watching the news, they love to pit us against each other instead of bringing us together. And I think that just makes people very, very, very nervous. And what's sad in this case is that, like you say, after he got out, the markets just went straight up. And so, you know, it did nothing but harm himself. So I think the best thing people can do right now is to not watch the news.
Oh, man.
To be quite frank. I mean, you'll have your mental health will be so much better off, and your decisions will be based in a long-term calm strategy versus emotion.
Right.
Yeah, you cannot make decisions based on what you hear in the news or read in the paper. I remember when I first got in the business in 1983. I hadn't been a licensed broker at the time, as a stockbroker, right, not an advisor, for a month. And I'm sitting at my desk reading the Wall Street Journal like I thought every good advisor would do first thing in the morning. And a guy walks by and says, oh, he says, you're a historian. I said, what? He says, you're reading what happened yesterday. It has nothing to do with what's going on today. You're a historian. And they made a good point. But people still, to this day, they read something, they act like they're the only ones that read the article, you know, and they want to go trade on that or make a decision on that.
Yeah.
So what I don't want them paying attention to, and I'm sure David would agree, is don't pay attention to the news.
No.
As we tell people on CNBC, turn it on, but just don't turn it up.
Yeah.
Don't hear it. Just watch the stuff, but don't listen to it.
Yeah. If you've got to know what the market's doing, that's fine.
Right.
But open your app and your.
Again, I try to remind people all the time. Most of the people in our world, George, you can say that we have definite opinions about what's going to happen or based upon, but it's all based upon the rearview mirror, like you're talking about.
It is.
And so if they were just really honest, everyone on CNBC making a great big prognostication, they don't know. They don't know. And if they're lucky enough to be right one time on some big thing, everyone thinks they're an expert. And if you follow those, and I've followed several since 2008, 2009, 2004, they're never right again. It's one of those things where you just go, you know what? History is what I like to look at. And history's on our side if you're a long-term investor. And here you hear us say it all the time, discipline trumps conviction. We don't let our convictions move us. We let our discipline move us.
So you brought up history, and you guys have a little bit of it. You've got decades of experience. So you've seen, it's not like you guys are sitting here talking about this and only being in the business for 3 to 5 years. You guys have seen market cycles.
35 years for me. How about, what it be you, George?
41.
Yeah.
So as you look back on that one, what kind of the direction I wanted to go today was more on how do we help investors, whether they're our clients or not, become educated and empowered in their decisions and guiding them to think along the right lines. You know, yeah, we want them to think about the right things.
That's a great question.
So in that aspect, what are a few unhealthy things or unhealthy ideas or unhealthy lines of thinking that you've seen certain clients or past clients? They could be current clients, but maybe clients in the past. What have they focused on though? What are some unhealthy things they've focused on?
So I'll step in first on that and just go, you hear these terms all the time. If you watch TV, loss aversion, recency bias, those things are real. And it's amazing how someone can be up huge for the year, have one big day where it pulls back and just lose their mind. Like it's all going to go,
right.
Like they forecast that one day into the future going to happen every day.
Sure.
None of that ever happens. In fact, if you look, the clustering of volatility is something we look at all the time. And when we say that, what we mean is your biggest down days are usually accompanied within a week or two of your biggest up days.
Oh, yeah.
You can't, and no one can time that unless they, and if anyone does it, they were just wildly lucky. Wildly lucky. No one can
do it. So, well, a few weeks back, we had a Friday-Monday pairing of one of the worst down two market days in the previous, it was at least 15 months, I believe. It had to go back that far. But then the following Tuesday was one of our best market days.
Yes.
We have preached about that. Well, there's a definitive example of what we're talking about.
Yep. Yep.
So, well, George, what about you? What's something else?
Well, I think what we see that I wish people would not pay attention to is headlines.
Yep.
They have to realize, everybody should realize that I don't care what sort of medium it is.
Yeah.
Newspaper, magazine, television, radio, they're all selling space. They're all selling advertising space. The more they keep you tuned into that station, the more they can charge for their advertising space. And so it's all about headlines and clickbait,
yep,
things to keep you tied into them that aren't there to help you at all. They're there to sell advertising space. And I think a lot of what I see out of a lot of people today, I would call it a casino mentality or a scoreboard mentality. Something happens in the market, they want to know what happened in their portfolio. How'd that impact me today?
Right.
And sometimes they make decisions based on that. And that's not investing. That's speculating or trading or whatever. And so I think—
Gambling,
guessing. Yeah. And I think that, so headlines, I think, get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Their mentality, along with the behavioral finance that David referenced, those sorts of things get in the way of sound investing, which is why I think it's better to have somebody else run that investment strategy for you, because they can be more unemotional, not get tied up in that stuff.
Do you guys agree with the line of thinking? And again, I know we're sitting here as advisors, so we're kind of highlighting our own industry, but it's a Vanguard study about their behavioral finance and the advisor-client relationship. But an advisor, whether it's Full Sell, whether it's another institution, but that advisor relationship can add, it's like 2 to 3 percentage points of added value, because in all we're doing is helping you not almost try to, we're helping you not time the market. It's not in and out. That advisor adds value by helping coach the clients and talk them to your conversation earlier. You're talking them away from hopefully a decision that could be detrimental.
Yeah.
And there's a rhyme or reason. Some clients just have to get out and it's okay. Or some clients have to pull money out for some reason. It's fine. But
when we first got into fee-based investment management, I made the transition in 1990. And one of the reasons we did that was many times the best advice to give to a client is to do nothing. But it was great advice. They're ready to do something, and the best thing they should have done is nothing. But an advisor doesn't get paid for that. A transactional advisor doesn't get paid for telling someone to do nothing.
For not doing,
they're going to have you do something.
Oh yeah,
and we didn't like that.
They're going to have you do a lot.
Yeah, they may have to make two trades. Just go. Let's get rid of that and get this.
Yep.
You know. So that was one of the impetuses for us to go to manage money, for that reason.
Okay.
Early in my career, George, there was a guy. I was on the trust department side of the house, and he was on the brokerage side of the house. And he bragged about, and he thought it was a good strategy. He just wasn't smart enough to know it wasn't, that he would take his clients to cash right as the markets just got killed, because it helped him. It helped him. And then he'd average them in after that.
Wow.
And over time, I just can't even imagine what his clients have lost. But his clients bought into that. I mean, he had a large book of business, and they bought into that, because instead of going against their emotional distress and being the adult in the room, he placated it and allowed them to hurt themselves.
Yeah, preyed on them.
But it helped him a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
I think in the early years in the 80s, I think a lot of advisors, brokers again, they were brokers, they weren't advisors then. They were trying to find the right way, but at the time they were trying to make money. You know, it wasn't about helping the client as much as it was creating income.
Those are great. I think it's a little easier to identify some of the unhealthy things, and we've talked about them. Next, though, let's flip it around. What are some things over the years, or right now, last week you had a conversation maybe, but what are items or pieces of information or things you want clients to pay attention to? Where do you try to get your clients or our investors to turn their attention to? What are we wanting them to look at? An easy answer is, well, just don't worry about it. Just trust us. But I think there's got to be, like I said earlier, there's got to be that education and empowerment in there as we help them understand it's okay to look at the numbers, but here's what we're going to take it. We may take this with a grain of salt, or we may not put as much weight into that, whatever it may be.
I think clients, just like their bank account statements or their credit card statements, they should look at all the activity in their accounts. They get a monthly statement. They get notified of it. They should look at the activity, primarily to see if money is going in or out. Now, as far as the transactions, you know, I'd hope that clients would take advantage of opportunities for review. Those reviews is a lot more than just showing how returns have compared to benchmarks. There's a lot more to a review than that. So if clients could be looking at the right things, make sure the transactions are, nothing is out of place, take advantage of review times, take advantage of any opportunity to learn. I will tell you, my best clients over the last 40 years, they've learned. You know, education was a part of that. And that's what I think would be consistent with of my long-term clients, is they've learned as we've gone along.
They become educated.
We've helped to educate them.
The ones that allow you to educate them.
Right.
That's right. And I would say, and kind of tagging on that with George, though, what I try to really get people to look at is to understand the game we're playing. We're playing a very long game for our clients.
Good point.
So we don't get caught up with what happens in a month, a quarter, not even really a year. We know if we're structured right. That's what we're worried about, is that asset allocation.
That's
and
right.
Making sure that we have filled the correct buckets and have done it so in a way that benefits them on an after fee basis and an after tax basis. If we can get them focusing out 3-5 years and seeing the long term, our financial plans help people do that.
Yeah.
It will take out the noise of short-term volatility and allow them to see the long-term picture, which is always way different than what you're seeing in the now.
Agreed.
Okay, I want to look at some of just your relationships over the years with your clients. And as you think of some of your more tenured relationships, maybe some of your more tenured relationships are not great and you've just had to, you know, it's been a headbutting at times, but some of those are those most rewarding relationships we have, because there's people we care about and they're people we love. And so at the end of the day, they've stuck with you because they trust you. But as you consider some of those relationships, your rewarding ones, your most tenured ones, some of your favorite clients, what are characteristics that stick out about that relationship?
A couple things come to mind immediately for me. They're normally relationships with people who do what they say they're going to do. And they expect that out of me. And so as long as we both do what we say we're going to do, that really helps a relationship a great deal, number one. Number two, what I've seen out of some of my best clients is they don't use a rearview mirror. They never look back. You never hear them say, true, golly, if I'd have done this instead of that, look how much more I'd have had.
I don't hear
that from my clients. I think that speaks to their educational process. You know, education is the heart of what we do. The more a client knows about investing, the more they'll appreciate what it is we do for them.
Yep.
Because they'll understand this is not an easy game. This isn't just making bets on a roulette wheel. This is really investing for the long term, as David said. We don't guess, we don't gamble. We're long-term investors in a short-term world. That's who we are. But our clients, I think the ones that have bought into our strategy, they've realized that they don't need to go try to hit the ball out of the park. Let's just stay in the game. Don't make any stupid mistakes.
Right.
And that what makes what we do a lot better, a lot easier, and more fulfilling for them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So, absolutely. When I think about like rewarding, like really deeply rewarding relationships, though, too, I think it's about the ones that literally become your family over time.
Sure.
It's amazing. In fact, I had a prospect once I met with, and he said, "What makes you guys different?" And I said, "Well, you know, our clients become our family." And he goes, "Hey, I already have enough friends. I don't need friends." I go, "Then you don't need me, because I don't think you do as good a job when you don't care about somebody. I just don't."
Mm-hmm.
And so our clients are people we have deep relationships with. And their clients that George talked about was so true will allow us to not let them blindly trust us, but allow them to educate us on our processes and what we do and how we do it so they can keep us accountable, hold us accountable. You should never just trust someone that does something so critical as managing all your wealth like we do. You know, Reagan, what do we always say? Trust but verify.
Yeah.
And I tell that to all my clients, but the truly rewarding ones are the ones where you're emotional at their funeral and you're taking care of their kids when it's over with.
Yeah.
Those are the real rewarding ones. And those are the ones you look back on and go, wow, I was really blessed I got to do that.
You know, you both have had and currently still have or help oversee relationships where it's multiple generations. Talk about those a little bit, because I think that's some of our bread and butter as those multi-generational clients. And what has made that transition successful in your all's opinion, as far as you were the first generation's advisor, but now you've got relationships with the third generation? How has that happened? How does that work?
For me, it was something I learned really early in my career. I remember I lost an account because I had a client die, and I was just, the account was transferring out, and I think I was 24. My boss came to me and goes, "Hey, I noticed this account's coming out. What's the deal?" And I told her, I said, "Well, you know, Mr. So-and-so died, and so that's going out." She goes, "Wow, you never took time to get to know his children or anything." And I got that look, that long look, let me know if I didn't change the way I did business, I wouldn't be doing business with her very long.
That's a good point.
So I made a concerted effort especially around the holidays, making sure I was not out of town and making myself available to my clients' children when they came into town. So, you know, some of our clients didn't want their kids knowing,
sure,
which I encouraged them to let them know. But the ones that did, you just develop a relationship. And if you really look at it, it's against the norm for the next generation to stay with their parents' advisor. I mean, literally, the overwhelming majority of people move on to another advisor they're currently working with. We break that norm here. Literally, I can't even remember the last time someone died and an account went to somebody else. It just went, we took care of the next generation.
Yeah.
Because we make a very, very, you have to make an effort to get to that next generation. But when you do it, it's rewarding, number one, because you help them in their formative working years do the right things.
Sure.
And then two, it's really rewarding when you're helping them through the most emotional, toughest time of their life. And when their parent passes and they go, "Hey man, thank you. I'm with you." Yeah. And you keep on working for them. So it's good. Yeah.
I think that I agree with all that David said there. I would say that the relationship for me, the relationship for many of my clients' children were just born out of a sincere interest in my client, just asking about them and what was important to them. And every time we would meet, you know, I'm genuinely interested in their children.
Yeah, sincerity is huge.
Yeah, and so I think it just kind of comes out of that, but also, like David said, it's unusual for us to keep a client's child as a client because we're too old for them.
Sure.
So that's where I think succession is very important. That was one of the driving factors of me coming to Full Sail Capital. I saw the youth that was here, and I saw a succession plan that could take place. And the comfort that that gives to the client is almost as much as the comfort it gives to the advisor, to me.
Yeah.
To know that I'm leaving my clients in good hands.
Well, and you can speak directly to this in the fact that over the past, 6 months, 7 months, you have been going through that transition with the clients, and I have not heard one single complaint as far as from any of your clients. In fact, I've heard a lot of them talk about how they so enjoy the team aspect, because it wasn't just one person sitting there,
right,
you know, right behind George to, you know, try to help facilitate that whole transition. He has an entire team from David to Hunter to Kyle to Max to myself. I mean, you name it, we've got people there ready to step in and help. And I think that's huge. The team approach we take in that aspect is huge, and it helps maintain those multi-generational clients.
And it's totally different. I mean, we do pause and look around at our industry, and it just seems like most of the people in our industry, everyone who's there is siloed. They're just in right. their office. They take care of their accounts alone. And if you need something and they're not there, you got to wait for them to get back.
Yeah.
It is just not, it's not that way here. It's, yeah. It's team full sale.
Yeah, it is. It is. I forgot Scott. Sorry, Scott. You're still out there.
Yeah. Yeah. For now. For now.
Well, okay. I think sincerity is something you said just a second ago that I loved. And then the education side. And if you don't think we try to educate clients, we hand out a book every single year and we don't write the book. We find books out there that help educate our investors, educate clients, educate prospects. We've got another one this year that we've identified that's more on the behavioral finance side of things and how our minds think about money.
You know, a couple of thoughts there. I think the education also stands out in the quarterly piece, the market update.
Absolutely.
That we prepare and send out. You know, that's something. I brought these. You've never seen these. I used to do these for clients. I did them for, this goes back maybe 10 or 12 years.
George is pulling out a stack full of papers just from a manila envelope.
A bunch of little places that I used to send out, but it was all based on education, because education is a process. It is not an event. We can't have one meeting with a client and expect them to understand what it is we do. We have to have multiple meetings. So I think all that education we do is what leads to a better relationship with our client, because it's better for our client.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's very important that we
and
do
it
that.
Gives them peace in times where other people don't have peace.
Right.
It truly, the ones that really dig in on that, George, and you're better at it than anybody, George.
Thank you.
Sending stuff. You really are. And the clients that have that, you just see relief on them. And in fact, I met with a prospect client who had talked with one of my clients a week or two ago when the markets had just gotten crushed. And he said, what made me call you was I talked to your client and they just said, oh, I just laughed when I saw it go down. I just laughed when I saw it go down. I've learned these are things, and I've learned to just not to close my app that day, not pull up my account and enjoy my life. And he goes, 2 days later, I was ahead of where it was before it went down. And he goes, and even if it wasn't, I know the length of the game I'm playing right. with my team. And he goes, I needed to call you after that. And I was like, really? Well, that's cool.
Great. Yeah.
You know, whenever we have a strategy like ours, and we're getting off topic.
No, you're good. Okay. It's okay.
Where realizing losses is a very important point of part of what we do. I think many clients have come to get that now. They understand when markets go down, we might be able to grab some losses to offset later with some gains. And I remember one particular client wanted us to take a bunch of losses to offset some gains, and we took them all at once, and then we reset prices right before the end of the year. And Zach's comment after we did this was, man, this could really work out well for the client either way. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, if the market after the first year, if it really sells off big, we'll be able to grab some more losses, which then set us up for future. Most advisors would say, we're going to make this change. Man, after the first year, this market's going to take off and these changes really ought to do well. Zach's got a plan B in place.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, yeah, we hope that. But plan B is if it goes down, we're going to grab some losses.
Bottom line, with the game we're playing, the length of the game we're playing, losses help our clients.
They're money in the bank.
So we're just as active on a down market as we're on an up market, realizing those, that tax loss harvesting George is talking about there. Man, if you can get your arms around that, it is hard to get your arms around that at first, because that loss part of our brain doesn't like to kick in. And even we've had some CPAs have trouble with that. And then after we've really walked them through it, they go, oh my God, well, this is amazing. And it really helps our clients long-term, because truly, I don't think people realize, they go to a lot of people in our world and they'll show them their returns gross of fees, right? Instead, we show ours net.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't care about the tax effect of the trading they've done.
Yeah.
to their clients, or they've waited till November or December to look around for some losses to offset when you've missed the whole year, which may have offered you. November and December usually are times the market's pushing back up.
Right.
And so you've missed those opportunities.
Yeah.
And you look at it and you just go, wow, Zach's attitude, as George pointed out, really has taught me something over time. Is that, and it's humility. We don't know what the markets are going to do, but we have a plan to benefit our clients regardless.
I think one of the hardest conversations we have around here is when to highlight maybe some bad news in the market. I know we talked about it. Everybody and their dog was putting out communications, you know, a couple weeks ago when the market tanks. Well, if we do that, are we highlighting the bad news, or are we educating our clients? And so we have these conversations internally, and it makes me think to remind our clients, to remind investors of our team behind the scenes is digesting all the news we're telling you to ignore. We're not ignoring it. We're not just, you know, turning everything off and, you know, willy-nilly behind the scenes, just, you know, having fun. Like, we are digesting all this news. Our investment team has a process in place. They're digesting all this news. So when we tell people to turn it off, it's because we're digesting it. We're as a team talking about it, making sure we're paying attention to the right things. And so it's just that weird line of, you know, we don't want to draw too much attention to the bad news, but we also want our clients to understand we're watching it. Yeah, we're digesting right.
We're just processing it through an unemotional filter with very, very, very deep fundamentals.
Yeah.
Looking at it versus looking at it, which is pure emotion, which, hey, listen, I'm like that on my own account too.
Yeah.
On my own stuff, I'm emotional about it. That's why a long time ago, I stopped looking at anything on my account. So Zach just comes down and tells me if I'm doing okay. I don't even look.
One of the things I remember as I think about that is data equals information, but data and information do not equal knowledge.
Mm.
So it's one thing to have all that data hit your social medias, you know, whatever, right. But to put it to implementable knowledge is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people, they get information and they don't think about the other side of that
right.
coin, and they go for it, you know,
yeah.
and
yep.
without thinking it through.
Yeah. Anything else as we wrap up, you two co-captains?
Well, this has been good.
That was fun.
It's been really good.
I enjoyed doing it.
I just think it's just such a good reminder, especially as we head into September, October, November, given the election year. I mean, we thought it was noisy the past couple weeks. It's about to get really noisy. Yeah,
turn your TV
noisy,
off.
But as long as people realize that who the president of the United States, whoever it is, does not impact the stock market,
yeah.
I would say maybe the houses of Congress could. But as long as they stay divided, I think we're in pretty good shape there.
I agree.
One thing Zach says a lot is, you know, the market likes the gridlock. So
they do.
President, Democrat, Republican, the market wants to see the opposite side have one of the,
that's right.
you know, one side of the aisle. And it's just a good reminder of,
yeah.
and again, if we're concerned about the next 4 years, then our investing timeline's off.
That's true.
We're investing today for something Zach says all the time. We're investing today for 5, 7, 10 years down the road.
That's right.
That's it.
Good reminder. Gentlemen, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tyler.
Both.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank
appreciate
you for all
time.
You do for us. So everybody have a great week. We'll be back soon. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.